Hey guys, and welcome back to Lumos Maxima,
the podcast with bright ideas about all things Harry Potter.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Delaney, and we're your hostess with the most.
This podcast will contain spoilers, mature language, adult themes, and a lot of opinions.
Each week, we analyze Harry Potter themes, content, characters, and more.
And we even do some extra stuff to keep it fun and fresh.
Now that you know the deal, let's get into the real stuff in this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back. We are doing so good at this bi-weekly thing. If you can't tell, it's our second episode. Two in a row. You know what? Three would be considered no longer
a coincidence?
Yes, thank you. So we're almost... Delaney always knows what I'm trying to say.
Not always.
Actually, most of the time we have no idea what we're trying to communicate to each other, and it takes a lot of talking to figure it out.
No, it's like half a ton. Oh my god, my dog keeps sneezing.
My dogs are passed out right now because my little baby graduated from puppy class today, and he's so exhausted from all the socialization.
Same. But no, most of the time I feel like I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, we're actually the same person, just two different bodies, so.
We're the same person, except exactly opposites. Yeah, sounds about right.
Anyway, this week, we have a part two of our Sirius Black controversial characters installment. If you want to know about his family history, his school history, that kind of stuff, that's in part one, so you can go back and listen to that. This week, we're going to dive right into the controversy about the character. We touched on it a little bit last week, and we'll touch on some of the personality traits that bring out a lot of the controversy before we just, like, get into it, but that's what we're doing this week. Before we get started, though, a weekly wizarding question. I obviously listen to a bunch of other Harry Potter podcasts. Duh.
Same.
I like to steal the best ideas from them. No, I don't.
Nah.
But I was listening to an episode of a podcast recently, and they mentioned that it was elitist for Dumbledore, Order of the Phoenix, Harry, that whole crew, to keep information from the public. And I had a hard time with this. I did not think so. So my question to you is, was it elitist? And I use that word because that's the word that they used. Was it elitist for them to keep that information? And then one step further, is it then also elitist for the wizarding government as a whole to keep information from the wizarding community, which we see throughout the books that they do?
So I don't think elitist is the right word.
I don't think elitist is the right word either.
First of all, I don't think that's the right word. Second of all, when the government was keeping things from the wizarding world, I don't think it was because they thought they were smarter or anything like that. I think they were trying to save their skin and were trying to not cause
a panic. Right. I think there was something altruistic behind the decision that they were making. It wasn't with malice that they were like, hey, let's just not tell anyone that this little Hitler man's back in action.
Right. And also, I don't actually think that Dumbledore and Harry tried to keep things from the public. In fact, they were trying to tell people.
They actively tried to tell people.
Yeah, and the government was pushing them down and pushing back. They were actively trying to tell people.
Thank you. Thank you for validating that.
No problem.
I find in general that there is always a fine line with how much the general public needs to know. I think that there's a very structured art to telling people the pertinent information without giving them so much that it then consumes their lives. It kind of derails everything. And I think that happened a lot in the books where they were given way too much or they weren't given enough. And I think that Dumbledore, the Order, Harry, and that whole group worked really hard to try and at least help people to be a little bit more vigilant in the situation that they needed to be and that they were actively shut down by the government. But no, I didn't think elitist was the word for it. I thought it was very odd. I didn't follow that train of thought at all.
Yeah, and I also don't really 100% fault the ministry for not telling them everything. I fault Fudge completely because most of that was trying to save his reputation.
He really fudged up.
Nice. Thank you. But for the most part, those kind of things, like you were saying, like it's a struggle as to like how much you should actually tell the public and how much you shouldn't. And you don't know if it was the right call until afterwards. So
right.
That's a hard call.
I think initially the decision to not tell anyone was a really good decision because it was something that they didn't think was possible, that was difficult to prove, and that would really incite panic because it was the greatest wizarding war that their community had ever seen. So to just, like, on the whim of a child say, hey, he's back and he's killing people is very difficult to do. That's really hard to present that information and be like, an 11-year-old boy told us, so we're going to believe him.
Yeah, I understand where they were coming from. I think that we, as the reader and being completely aware of everything happening, I think we take that, we judge a little too harshly on that because, yeah, like you said, it is a child saying this. Now, I do think that it is Harry Potter and right. Dumbledore saying it, so they maybe should have taken a little more seriously because my problem was not that they didn't tell people, but they didn't actually investigate it fully. Right. They weren't like, okay, we're not going to tell any people. We're going to see if there's any merit to this and then maybe tell people. But, you know, whatever. We could debate that forever. But that was my big problem with it. Not they were elitist. And I don't think the order tried to keep anything from anybody. If anything, I think they were doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're on the same page with that one. So
yeah, we thoroughly discussed that.
5 minutes in, all we've talked about is the government. Okay. So to touch a little bit on last week, some of the personality traits that we think fit directly with some of the controversy for Sirius Black in general were recklessness, bravery, loyalty, arrogance, impatience, passionate, temperamental, and mischievous. So we talk about it a little bit more in depth and kind of give point and counterpoint to some of those. But there are a lot of points of controversy. And I think, at least from my perspective, a lot of it stemmed from that he was a character that we had to hate initially, that we were afraid of, that we thought had ill intent. And then, hey, big reveal, not a bad guy. Now we have to love him. And we got a little bit of character whiplash from that because there aren't very many characters that have their not totally redemption arc going on, but, you know, something along those lines that's so quick in the books. I mean, it takes Draco Malfoy 7 books. It takes Dudley 7 books. Like, everyone else gets several books. And I mean, although obviously Prisoner of Azkaban is hyper focused on this relationship between him and Harry and that whole backstory, The turnaround of, like, who Sirius is to us as a character is pages.
And not only that, I think that he has multiple changes. So he's a villain first, and then he's, oh no, he's Harry's godfather and he's going to save him. And then, you know, he continues growing into that role. And then later with Snape's vision, we see, oh, but he was actually kind of a bully. Right. And so then it's left with, like, even more of a complex feeling of, like, so he's not evil, but he may not be good either. But he's good, but he did.
But we really love him. Things. But he represents a lot of things that Harry never had. But he also represents a really stunted group of people who never grew out of it. I mean, he's very complex as a character.
It's very, yeah, he's very, very complex.
Very, very complex.
And like you said, in a short amount of time.
Very short amount of time, because we hear about him in book one, but we get introduced to him in the 3rd book, and then he dies in the 5th book. So, there's going to be spoilers, like... guys.
In case you didn't know.
In case you didn't know. Well, that's in our intro somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Our pre-recorded portion of this.
It is. Okay. We're fine. Oof. But it's not like Dumbledore where, like, we have the entire series to try to figure out this complex character.
This web that he is. But, I mean, we have a very finite amount of time, and a lot of it, we don't get a ton of just Harry serious interaction. We get a lot of through some sort of secretive communication method. We get it around a bigger group of people. We get it in the context of the order. I mean, there's very few moments where we get, I would say, authentic serious, because he does this thing where, depending on the situation, he's got a couple different personalities. They're not strikingly different from one another. But it definitely brings out different
mannerisms and everything.
Right. It brings out different elements of his personality depending on, you know, kind of what's going on. So I would say the biggest controversy surrounding him in general, the biggest complaint that people have about the character, the biggest thing that people recognize as an issue is that he is an adult who constantly acts like a child.
Yes.
Which he is. He is a man child. He lost a significant portion of his friend group. He was imprisoned at a very young age. He is a very stunted person who, mm-hmm. unfortunately, never matures, never grows into the role of an adult. And so when we meet him, he is still exactly how he was at 21.
Yeah.
And he is now in his 30s. And it doesn't feel like it.
And not only that, he also went through all of this trauma. And then as soon as he gets out, he's expected to just assimilate. Like an adult.
You're normal now. Oh, you're a godfather. Be a godfather. He's like, whoa, I've never done this before.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't get a lot of practice with it. He also doesn't know Harry. Harry has grown up completely separate to Sirius. And although for the first year, you know, Sirius was around, he doesn't know Harry.
Yeah, the only thing he knows about Harry is that he's James and Lily's son. So he treats Harry like he would expect James and Lily's son to be.
Which is hard because Harry wasn't raised by Lily and James.
Right.
It's difficult because he's always put in a position where it's obvious that there is something lacking in the adult and the maturity department. And what ends up happening is then Harry, the child, has to be forced to make adult situations.
Yeah.
So, for instance, when he wants to go see Harry when he's at Hogsmeade, and he's like, I'll just transform into a dog and no one will know. And Harry's like, that's the dumbest thing you can do. So many people are out looking for you. Why would we risk it? And it makes it so that our 14-year-old character is now being an adult.
The one parenting.
Right. The one saying, hey, we can't do this. It's a bad idea. I mean, I imagine this is what Hermione feels like all the fucking time.
Yeah.
But it's hard, especially because Harry, although faced with a lot of very mature situations himself, is not a mature person.
No, he's not. He's not emotionally mature at all.
No, he lacks a lot of the like basic decision-making skills because he also has personality traits of being kind of reckless and just kind of jumping into situations and not really analyzing it. So it's difficult. And then it rolls over into the other thing that people don't really like about Sirius, which is that he treats Harry as a stand-in for James almost the entire time we had that relationship. And that's not an appropriate dynamic to put on that relationship.
It isn't. And I think that people do kind of forget how much Sirius has been through because once he comes back after Prisoner of Azkaban, so after the end of that book, he seems to act like a normal person. And his trauma is never like acknowledged after that, not losing his friends, not the 12 years in Azkaban, not the being completely isolated from the rest of the world. He's just expected to act like a normal human being, and it's not ever going to happen. But yeah, I mean, him treating Harry like he's his father, it's the absolute worst thing that he could do, because Harry is already kind of under that weight of being the chosen one and like the boy who lived, and you look like your father except for you have your mother's eyes. So he's always being looked like, his personality and who he is always through a different lens, and he really probably needs someone like Sirius to be able to look at him as his own person. But unfortunately, because of the trauma and everything with Sirius and him seeing this person as Sirius or as a James and Lily's son, he's not able to provide that for Harry.
And the people that surround Sirius once he is no longer imprisoned fail him in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't, no one says, hey, talk to me about what's happened. Not even Lupin, who
was a very huge
part of it. It's not acknowledged at all. And then he is re-imprisoned. He goes and lives at Grimmauld Place. He cannot leave. He cannot do anything. Obviously, we understand the reasoning behind it. Obviously, there's a reason for a majority of the things that they did. But
it's not healthy.
No, it's not healthy. And in a lot of ways, and for a lot of reasons, that's why he acts out so much. That's why he is so immature, because he is also being treated like his opinion is not valid. Yeah. And he does not have as much of a say at the adult table. When, I mean, yes, but no, there's counterpoint with that, you know?
Yeah, and it's a fine line, because we see Sirius and Molly go at it a lot because Molly can see that he's not really fit to be Harry's like sole provider. But she's also not acknowledging that Sirius needs to be with Harry for Harry's sake. That is his biggest connection to his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that is incredibly important for Harry. But it's just, I don't know, like they're fighting against each other when really they should be working together. And I wish that we would have seen Molly have a moment with Sirius where she acknowledges what he's been through and mm-hmm. offers help instead of treating Sirius like a child as well.
And I mean, I'm sure it's very frustrating from the other adults in the group's perspective to see someone that is an adult who's been through a lot, not assimilate to an adult role and to continue to kind of force the issue of, hey, I'm not going to act like an adult. And I'm also going to make it so Harry has to act like an adult, because mm-hmm. that's got to be extremely frustrating. They're like, dude, we have spent so long keeping this boy alive and yeah. you pop up and now you want him to do all this dumb shit. Like, we're not going to let that fly.
And I also think part of probably the issue for the adults is that they see Remus Lupin, who has been through not the same, but probably the same level with how he's treated as a werewolf and losing his friend. But
loses the same people and then has his own trials and tribulations. I mean, like, I don't want to say one is worse than the other, but has seen his fair share.
Yeah, I mean, they could be comparable for the amount of trauma that you could have for a person, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But Remus is fine. He's fully functioning and mm-hmm. fully more, he's mature, all of that. But we have to realize that he was like that from the beginning. He was right. the one who was kind of the balancer in the Marauders. Sirius has those personality traits that, like, you throw in the trauma and the stunted maturity and it's just all hell's gonna break loose.
Yeah.
So people handle trauma differently.
That makes him act like kind of a dick. I mean, uh-huh. that's something that I wouldn't say is a common complaint necessarily, but something that people fully acknowledge about his character. The reason that fan fiction loves him so much is because he's like a good-looking, cheeky guy mm-hmm. who is rude to people. Like, and then it's so wonderful when he has these sweet moments because, oh, he's not normally like this. He's normally kind of an asshole.
Right.
You don't have to be an asshole. All of these people in the room love you. You're there for a reason. Just don't be an asshole.
And it's like, I wouldn't say that it's mean-spirited most of the time, but it's just a little too much, you know? Like, he's kind of, like, puffing up a little
right,
bit.
Right, but, and we also know that he has the potential to be a very mean person.
Yes,
I mean, he can kind of be an asshole, and everyone has that friend that's, like, kind of an asshole, but it's all in good fun, and you totally understand where it's coming from. That's the personality. But he, and we've seen moments of it, takes it way too far. It becomes downright mean.
Yes. Mostly to Snape. That's the main person we see at the end of that wrath for Sirius. And my one issue with the controversy of, like, oh, he, you know, he's a bully, he bullied Snape. Yes. I think that is a problem with the Marauders, is that they did bully Snape. However, we only see that through Snape's perspective, which people see things differently, and we only saw one event. We never saw a full-fledged you know, time period, so who knows.
And probably, I would like to just point out that we see Slytherins through the eyes of Harry, who uh-huh. from the first day at Hogwarts is just like, I fucking hate these guys.
Yes,
so when people shit on Slytherins all the time and they don't realize this is the same bias that
absolutely.
We give the Marauders a break for.
Uh-huh,
this is it.
Yes.
And
it's a bias.
We have moments where Lupin, for the most part, acknowledges, like, oh, we did some pretty, like, fucked up stuff when we were teens, but, like, we're uh-huh. not teens anymore. And you're like, right. You're right, Lupin, you're not a teen anymore.
Yeah.
Howsomever.
Now, Sirius even acknowledges that they were pretty horrible in their youth, but I don't think that he regrets
it as much
as
Lupin. I don't think he feels
bad about
it. Right. Lupin, I think, looks back at it and he's like, damn, I was like this. Then some shit happened to me and people started being assholes to me and I realized this does not feel good. But Sirius, he almost looks back on it and smiles, which is a big turnoff for me. That you look back on, like, the bad decisions you made as your younger self and you're like, yeah, I was pretty badass, wasn't I? And you're like, no, you were downright mean.
See,
you were horrible.
I don't see him looking at it as he's like, oh, I'm badass. But I think that he looks at it as like, oh, wow, we were really stupid, horrible kids. Like, laughing about it. Like, yeah, we were assholes. Whereas Lupin is like, truly takes it serious and can understand that no part of that was okay or okay to look back on and laugh at. Where Sirius is like, yeah, yeah, it was horrible. We shouldn't have done it. But then, like, brushes it off.
But then, like, if given the opportunity to do it again, 9 out of 10 would do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly, again, when it comes to Snape. Now, mm-hmm. we do see that Snape is a horrible person. So, I mean, let's keep that in mind that it was through his bias. Oh,
Snape has no redemption here. Snape is a nice gray character for me.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of like that's all very personality-y in terms of him not growing up. Then there's the issue, which is that he is the only family that Harry has. And we fully acknowledge it. And by the time he and Harry have a good relationship, you're like, oh my God, thank God Harry has someone, a connection to his past and his family, someone who's present and there and like loves him, but treats it like his life is not important.
Like, and Sirius's life is not important?
Yeah, Sirius treats his life like it doesn't really matter what happens. And it ends up creating a lot of consequences and pain for people because he doesn't really care what happens.
Yeah, and I think that comes from the fact that all of a sudden he has a child that he is responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's not realizing that his life affects Harry so much. He probably sees Harry as like, hey, you've gotten this far, kid, like, sick. But he doesn't understand that, like, no, now you're responsible for someone. So therefore, right, your life matters.
He hasn't been accountable to anyone other than himself for a decade.
Exactly.
He has not had to look out for anyone else. He has not had to sympathize with anyone else. He has not had an emotional connection with anyone else in a decade.
And we also have to realize, too, that, like, his connection to Harry isn't, oh, I'm his parent. It's, I'm his godfather.
Right. I'm the fun uncle, not the dad. And everyone's thinking, like, no, we want you to be the dad. We want you to be the adult. We want you to be the rule enforcer and the words of wisdom and the mature opinion on all of these things that are happening.
Yeah. Which he never really signed up for because, I mean, technically that's what a godfather is if the parents die. We know that. But, I mean, from the beginning, Sirius was going to be the fun uncle unless something horrible happened. Then whoopsie, something horrible happened. And not only did he get, you know, kind of custody, I guess you could say, in the normal circumstances of like when the parents died. No, he went and spent 12 years in prison and then came back to this child who's now like, what is he, 13, 14?
Yeah, like going to be an adult here soon in their eyes.
Right. And then he's expected to act like he knows how to parent a 14-year-old.
And I gotta say, I do not think that Sirius should have ever been Harry's godfather. I think that that was a poor decision. Of all the people in that circle, I think that that was a bad idea. Now, I can only assume that Lily and James were like, hey, nothing bad is ever gonna happen. So it's okay to have this fun godfather. But...
So...
I just think you look at that group of friends and you pick the most irresponsible one who's always been kind of flaky with stuff and you're like, let's make him the godfather.
So I see it from a different perspective. I think that, yeah, they probably were like, we're definitely choosing the most irresponsible one here for sure. But I think that out of all the group, I think they were probably looking at Sirius as, if anything, this man will do absolutely anything for our child. He would die for him.
And I mean, it may have seemed like a really good way to keep Sirius in the group because I think that it was safe to assume, you know, when they were in their early 20s, they looked at Lupin and thought, yeah, he's gonna like get married and have kids and like have a normal family and like he's not gonna have any difficulty with the building a family, having that connection type life. Mm-hmm. But Sirius, from what we know about him, never indicated that like that was anything that he was gonna do. So it would have been really easy for them to kind of drift apart if Lupin's the godfather. It's all normal for him. I mean, obviously things didn't turn out normal for him, but it almost seems like that was a good way to kind of keep him like involved in everything.
So I see it almost as the opposite. So I see them looking at Lupin, who has his own shit to deal with being a werewolf and being like kind of like an outcast in society and everything. I see that as like, we're not going to also put this other pressure on Godfather. Instead,
maybe. Yeah, I mean, Sirius, at that time, he may have seemed like the lesser of two evils. We're like, whoa.
Yeah, and also we have to realize that we're judging Sirius as a Godfather after all the traumatic stuff. Sirius didn't go through all that trauma at first. Maybe they said, hey, maybe making him the godfather will responsibility. He'll be accountable more for his actions. He'll understand. He'll start to kind of like learn these things from being the godfather so that if something horrible does happen, he would have already been involved in this situation.
I mean, at least in the very brief glimpses we have of him as a godfather, he did perfectly fine in that role when Harry was the age where, like, he didn't really have to do a lot. So, I mean, if the circumstances had been different, he may have been a great godfather. Things may have turned out very differently. But they didn't, and he needed to fill a role that, like, he was never ready to fill.
Yeah, he wasn't capable after everything that happened to really fill that full parenting role. No, he wasn't. Do I think that he had the capability before all of this? Yes, and I think he had the capability and more time to devote to Harry than Lupin would have. And I truly think that they probably didn't want to put that on Lupin with everything that he already had.
Yeah, but, poor Lupin. Yeah. R.I.P. my man.
Yeah, for
real. So, something that people talk about a lot is the temperament of Sirius, which stands out from the other characters in a lot of ways, mostly because the adults that we see in the group, like in the Order and who work for Hogwarts, all your professor and stuff, they are like an above average maturity, an above average emotional control kind of group.
For sure.
And then we have Sirius, who is like flying off the handle. Takes everything very, very personally, very quick to be angry, a lot of impulsive decisions that, I mean, how often do impulsive decisions work out very well, you know?
Hardly ever. Yeah.
Right. So.
And I think that probably a lot of that is just who he is, and he probably wouldn't have grown out of that completely. But I think probably being 12 years in Azkaban with Dementors may mess with your emotions and your mental capacity to control your emotions.
Possibly. I think it's hard when you grow up as someone who takes everything personally and no one ever forces you to stop looking at everything like a personal attack, which is what it seems like from what we know about his childhood. Like, everything was just always a personal attack to him. And it made him kind of do some weird shit, basically. And I don't... Impulsiveness is something that's... It's a really difficult concept because a lot of people are impulsive as kids and very few people are impulsive as adults. And he's with a group of adults who aren't impulsive. So then he starts to see it as, well, not only am I not good at this role that I'm trying to fill because everyone's always on my back about being a godfather and being Harry Stanley, but also they just think I'm not as good of an adult as they are.
Yeah.
Just in general, not as good of it. Because, I mean, we see instances where he's not really being listened to. His input is not valid. He's not really welcome in some of the boardroom meetings and stuff that's going on with the Order.
And which isn't right, first of all.
Well, it's his house. Like, fuck off, guys.
Yeah.
It's his house. Man with the gold makes the rules. It's his house. So
it's
hard. It's hard not to be quick to anger and impulsive when you're put in a situation like that. But it would have been really nice to see him rise above some of that, so that it at least looked like he was trying to set a good example for Harry. Because unfortunately, what we don't get really is him actively trying to be a good example.
Yeah, I agree.
And Harry doesn't have a lot of good examples in his young childhood. He goes to Hogwarts and he kind of gets to do whatever he wants. He doesn't really have a lot of consequences for his actions. No one's really curbed his impulsiveness. And then he gets to Sirius, who is the person that's supposed to do that for him, and it's not happening.
Yeah, and I also think that there's a very fine line between being impulsive and being brave and decisive. Because, I mean, you know, there are a lot of impulsive decisions that work out for Harry because he's, and then everybody sees it as like, oh, he was brave and he made the decision quickly, and when really he was being impulsive and it worked out. So
I will say, though, after we meet Sirius, more and more of Harry's impulsive decisions do not work out well for him.
That is true. 100%. And the end of that book, Order of the Phoenix, shows that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But But yeah, I think there's a fine line with being brave versus being impulsive. And I think that's one that Harry walks. I don't think Sirius walks it as
no,
well.
Sirius,
I think he
barrels
tends towards
right
impulsive.
Through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I mean, we see it's complicated because for the first time in his life, he's free again. He has the opportunity to be around someone who's also a link to his past. Sirius is just as important to Harry as Harry is to Sirius. I mean,
definitely.
That dynamic goes both ways. So he's finally got all that. He wants to be actively engaged, and he is constantly being told no.
Yep.
By everyone. Yep. You can't do this. You can't see him. You can't go there.
He's acting out.
Yeah, he is, because, and I mean, we can only say it so many times, but he's a child.
Yeah, he's acting out like a child would.
Yeah. He's a very talented child, but he's a child. Mm-hmm. Which kind of goes into the next thing, which this is actually something that I see a lot of. And that is that he is kind of impulsive and kind of just wants to be like pissing people off and kind of making decisions that kind of ruffle feathers. And maybe he doesn't actually believe in the mentality. The biggest one I see it with is that he doesn't actually think that muggles, muggle-borns, half-bloods, you know, everyone are equal to purebloods. He just jumps on board with that because it pisses his family off.
So I don't buy into that. I think that's an added bonus. I think he would rebel either way. But I think that he rebels and attaches to this cause that he does believe. And hey, guess what? His family hates it as well.
I think that he jumps onto it because it pisses his family off and then grows to be a part of the ideology. Because I think that he has a tendency to do things that will annoy people and then find out that he likes them. Like, it ends up being for the right reasons at the end of the day. But what sparks him to do these things that pisses off his family, gets him burned off the family tapestry, becomes a Gryffindor and not a Slytherin, like all these things, I don't think it's because he's passionate about being a Gryffindor. I don't think it's because he really hates that there's blood strife. I think it's because he knows that it's going to make people talk about him. It's going to annoy his family. It's an easy way to jab back at people without really having to commit to a cause. And then he meets people who are more passionate about it. And he's like, oh, this is cool. Let's, you know, we'll actually do this.
I don't know. I see it as maybe the opposite, because I think that Sirius growing up in a house like that, I think he makes it very clear that from the beginning, he's seen how horrible that pure blood mentality can be. And I think that fueled his rebellion more than anything, just how horrible his family is. But I do think that he goes at it with a little more gusto just to piss them off. So I don't think the rebellion came in first, but I do think that just fuels the flame much more than it would have been if he weren't already going to be rebellious.
I don't know. I think he's just got one of those personalities where it's much easier to see things like, I would do this because it will piss them off, instead of I will do this because I believe in it. Just because he is really impulsive and he is kind of reckless, and he does have a tendency to be, you know, a little mischievous and kind of want to see if he can ruffle people's feathers. And he's kind of arrogant and immature in a lot of ways. And
yeah, we'll
never know.
No, obviously it's a fictional character, but, but I just think he goes into, like, especially in his later years and like the Order of the Phoenix and everything, I think he goes at it with a little more gusto than if you were just trying to rebel. Because during the time of the first Wizarding War? Yes. Because the one with Grindelwald wasn't the first Wizarding War, right? Okay, first Wizarding War. He is long past the point of pissing off his family. He's an adult, really, like a young adult.
Right, but
an adult nonetheless.
At that point, he had been spending time around people who believed in a cause, who believes in it before he did. He had become friends with people who felt like it was a bad thing, who wanted to be a part of something bigger. I think it was easy for him to make the decision to join the Order because that's what everyone he knew was doing. That's what all his close friends were doing. That's the decision that they had all made.
I think it made it easier, but it's a really big decision if you don't actually believe in the cause. And Also, well, something
I think with all of these things, he ends up believing in them. I just don't think that he gets into it for what people would consider the right reasons.
So, but at the same time, we have to realize, so he was sorted into Gryffindor at 11 years old. He hadn't met James. He hadn't met Remus. He hadn't met anybody else. He was only with his family. Then he's sorted into Gryffindor. No, I think he's has a predisposition to those kind of things of standing up for people and some of those other qualities. And I think
we also don't know if the sorting hat sorts based off of who you are when it happens or who the sorting hat honestly believes that you'll become. Because there are a lot of people that got sorted into Gryffindor that did not have their Gryffindor moment until way further along.
No, but it was in them already. Like, those qualities could be seen within them or could be or thought to be able to be nourished. Same thing with Sirius. So he hadn't found that cause yet, but he was already that type of person who wanted to stand up for people and saw that these things, you know, weren't right or that kind of stuff. And then when he was introduced to Muggleborns and half-bloods at school, and then knowing James and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because we also have to realize too, James was a pureblood. So it wasn't like it was like, oh, I'm standing up for my friend. It was a completely, really different cause than his own friends. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, maybe. He's got one of those personalities. I know people like him in real life who will eventually totally be on board with what they're doing and be very passionate about it, but only because it kind of starts out as a joke and then becomes something much more serious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he started out as a joke, but I do think he saw it as a means to an end. But then, yeah, I agree. I think it grew. But I don't think that he necessarily saw it as a joke to begin with. I think it was probably something he agreed with, but he wasn't, like, as into it as everybody else was. But then it grew.
So, lastly, and this is something that, like, I've agreed with in the past. I can be persuaded to believe it. And that is that he's not really a friend of and a friend to Remus. He's mostly just using him, which I gotta say I see it.
So my issue is, so I don't see it, but my issue is we don't get a whole lot of just Remus and Sirius.
And I
we
don't think that really see what their dynamic is. I think that the Marauders only worked because of James.
I agree with that, yes.
The Marauders only stayed together because of James. When James was no longer in the picture, it's not like there was a great effort between Lupin and Sirius to stay friends and to continue to communicate. And then when it becomes about James again, when it becomes about what happened to him, Sirius and Lupin kind of bond over what Peter Pettigrew had done and now are on a speaking basis. And then there's Harry, and Harry kind of fills a small bit of a void for James. And so in the third book, it's hard to argue that Lupin is not being used in some way. Lupin is a smart guy, so I don't think that he was oblivious to that fact, but there's a lot of things that are going on that Sirius is really pushing that's not friendship.
I don't know, because Remus didn't reach out to Sirius because he thought Sirius had killed his other best friend. That's going to be a hard, like, I wouldn't be able to be friends with that person either.
I don't know that Remus and Sirius are best friends, though. I think they're
best friends.
I think they're in a group of best friends.
No,
but I don't think that they really ever did shit like together, you know?
No, but one of his friends killed his other friend. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I couldn't be friends with that person either if they killed my other friend. And then I think it's complicated because he had thought that about him for 12 years. And then all of a sudden, no, wait, it's his other friend who killed his friend. And it's just a little bit complicated and a little bit awkward because probably Sirius is like, Remus, how could you not believe that I would never kill James? So there's that tension there probably. But I don't see Sirius as using Lupin. I don't see it. I don't see how that they're not like genuine friends. I think you're right that they're not best friends and they were more of a group than like just two friends. But I don't see how Sirius is using Lupin. Lupin decides to help Sirius out of his own volition. he's the one who realizes that Peter is still alive, therefore Sirius couldn't have killed Peter, therefore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see that.
I don't know. I think with the personalities that were in the Marauders, it would be very easy for Lupin to be the one that gets used. Obviously, Peter Pettigrew was the easiest in that regard, but I don't really know that I consider him to be, like, in the Marauders in a lot of ways.
No, I don't consider him to be in the Marauders. No.
I think it's easy to see this because with no James, there's no Sirius and Lupin. They don't interact. Their worlds don't overcross or overlap in any way. And it seems like, I would say, especially in Prisoner of Azkaban, that Sirius is really like, fuck what happens to you. I need to clear this for me. And Remus gets swept up in a lot of it. I mean, he's not dumb. Again, he knows what he's doing, but it kind of feels like Sirius doesn't really care what happens with Lupin. He just needs to make sure that his name gets cleared.
So for me, I don't even think Sirius's main motivation is to clear his name. I think it's to kill Peter. And yes, I do think that he has a total lack of disregard for what else is going to happen to anybody else, including Harry at this point. He wants to kill Peter Pettigrew. That is his main goal, and he's got tunnel vision. And again, trauma, all of that is factoring into that. So yes, I agree that he is not considering anybody else. But I also think that Lupin made the decision. I think it's also because once Lupin finds out, he's probably in like a panic and an emotional state of like, yeah, let's kill Peter and let's clear Sirius's name. Because there's also probably more guilt there for Lupin as well.
Oh, he's definitely got some guilt with the situation. I mean, yeah. To spend 12 years hating someone for something that they didn't do that actually turns out to be a much more tragic situation that's difficult. Yeah. Especially for someone that you grew up with thinking was a really good friend of yours.
Yeah. Now, I do think that younger Lupin probably was used by James and Sirius, the duo. I don't think that Sirius has as much power to try to use Lupin if James isn't there.
No, and I mean, I kind of see it in a lot of ways, just like the Golden Trio is. I mean, they use Hermione for a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely.
That kind of go beyond the normal ass that you have of a friend. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I can see how people would think this, especially depending on how you view Sirius as a person.
Yes, that is going to be a big determinant.
The more that you think he was justified in all of the decisions that he made post Azkaban, the harder this situation would be to agree with, I think. Yes. Definitely. So it's hard because this is a lot of the controversial characters, well, actually only about half of them, but for the most part, they're characters that you like. They're characters that are at the core characters that you want to love and see be successful. And, you know, I mean, we don't feel that way about Snape or Voldemort, but we do about Dumbledore and we do about Sirius. So it's, that's definitely something that adds a level of complexity to the characters and definitely makes the controversy a little bit more interesting because we still love him as a character. We still think he's awesome.
Yeah. And you can still like someone and think that they're generally a good person and also say like, yeah, but they're also very problematic.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, but I think that is exactly what makes them controversial and that's what makes them complex and that's what makes them some of the best characters in the series.
Oh, absolutely. He is definitely one of my favorite characters.
Definitely.
Very sad that he dies, but you know.
Yeah. Ugh. It's not fun.
No. So, Delaney, what are you loving this week?
So, I'm loving the fact that this week I'm buying a Disney annual pass to go down to the House of Mouse all the time, and I'm actually going to buy it right as soon as we stop recording.
Delaney is obsessed with Disney. It is unhealthy how obsessed she is.
It's not unhealthy.
It's unhealthy.
It's not unhealthy at all. Yeah. It's not unhealthy. It makes me happy. Stop.
If you have to say it's not unhealthy, it's... I am back on audiobooks. Delaney hooked me up with an app that lets me like check them out from my local library, which I didn't even know was a thing. And I've been on a podcast binge for like years now. And I forgot how much I missed listening to stories with continuity on my commute because I drive a lot for school and for work and stuff. And so it's nice to have something that picks up right where it left off and that's got an end point, because I mean podcasts don't necessarily do that, so
No.
It's been really nice. And
you're starting The Cuckoo's Calling, right?
I am. I'm like, I listen to it almost all day today. So I'm quite, so I'm like eight chapters in already, I think.
I'm so excited for you.
If you guys don't know what that is, we've talked about it before, but that is the adult book series written by JK under her...
Robert Galbraith.
Yes. So I just started that and it's good. It's interesting. It's just what I expected.
It is definitely. And the characters are great. Character development is great. Everything that JK is great at in Harry Potter, she brings to the series just with an adult detective twist, which is
fun.
Always fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Especially, yeah. I mean, we love crime. So yeah. That's fun for us. But
I mean, we don't, okay, hold on. We don't love
crime. Like to commit crimes. Okay.
No, no, no.
We like to burglarize houses.
No.
Okay. Well,
we don't like crime. We like hearing about
we like people who commit crimes stories. So we can hear about it.
So we can hear about how they got caught.
I mean, okay.
For me, it's always the procedural that gets me. That's what I like.
Yeah, that's true. I do love a good procedural. So thanks so much for listening this week. As always, we would love it if you would like us on social media, follow us, interact with us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter and Reddit, although we've never actually found our Reddit again, so don't do that.
Oops.
But you can find us on Instagram at Lumos Maxima Podcast and on Twitter at Lumos Maxima Pod. Please share the podcast with a friend. If you'll go onto whatever listening platform you have and rate, review, and subscribe, especially if it's Apple Podcasts, that really helps us out and it makes us feel nice.
Yeah.
We are going to be continuing with our controversial characters, the culmination, the reason this podcast started, in our next episode, because we will be kicking off Severus Snape, which is super exciting.
Get ready for a 2-hour episode.
Get ready for us to just go in on this character. Although I will say, the more that we talk about it, the more I realize he's a gray character.
Oh, for sure, but he's also, like, not...
But the worst, yeah. So that will be coming up in our next episode. If you have questions, comments, concerns with information, or you just want to chit-chat with us, you can also reach us at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys. And I think that's it.
That sounds about right.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.